going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on a very interesting evening here with you to do some WTF Prime Time! Joining me today, and for the first time getting top billing, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad. How is your evening?
Doing just fine.
Evening with nothing going on and nothing to worry about.
Nothing whatsoever.
Fantastic. What's it like going first?
Exactly the opposite of going last.
Speaking of which, there's another name to bring up, and that is Gog Dog.
I like to go first. I don't like the sudden change, and I would hope in the future that you reconsider it.
Okay. We'll put that to committee.
Although after tonight, I think Aaron deserved it.
Yes, he very much deserved it.
For once, I get some sort of recognition for fighting fires and trying to becalm people. And
the push notifications off, right? Like we're all good.
You did survive World War III. So.
Yeah.
So we are here to talk to you today about Operation Bumblebee Part 2. But to kick off, earlier today, I did a video stream because I got some new Glioses. And during the end of that video stream, like the last couple minutes, I said, hey, so I'm going to go record Operation Bumblebee Part 2. So I said, all right, to everyone watching, there were about, 19, 20 people watching. I said, can you guys tell me preemptively what you're surprised I didn't mention? So I got a list of things that they're surprised I didn't mention, and I wanted to share that now for all the Ustream peeps. Number one, Knockout's Wit. Number two, Ratchet Organ Harvest. Number three, Hatsune Miku. Number four, The Shield. Number five, The Walking Animation. Number six, Fist Fighting Bears. Number seven, Mech Trooper Number 5. Number eight, The Beat If You Can Feel It, coming to us from my good buddy Krin Sin. Number nine, The Lack of Crab Transformers in Transformers Prime. And number 10, Megatron lifted the hammer with one hand, but Bulkhead used two. So now, if any of you say you're surprised we forgot something, then maybe you should have been where you were supposed to be to tell us about it. So
I specifically need to bring up number 9. Were they not watching the 5-parter?
Hey, listen, I just relayed the message. But if you're surprised we didn't mention anything, then you know what? Maybe you should have been where you were supposed to be to notify us. So I'll let it go this time, but next time you're on watch, okay? So this was the second part of Operation Bumblebee, and a few things happened in this episode that I really enjoyed. The first thing I want to talk about is the resolution to the cliffhanger from last week happening entirely off screen. Because, much like I expected, the show didn't even try to... Like, I didn't think Bumblebee was at risk. The show didn't even try to really make you think that he was at life or death risk. They just kind of said, like, hey, guess what? He fell off the cliff, and it kind of hurt him, and it was pretty dumb.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on Bumblebee, kind of like... Did you guys expect the cliffhanger to be made into something more, or were you kind of...
Not at all. It was, hey, here's a good spot to end this episode.
Yeah.
It's a dramatic thing that lets you have a to-be-continued... They're not wrapping everything up and then flashing to be continued across the end screen. So it's the way they ended the episode to allow for a tie into the next one, but not there was nothing terribly perilous about it.
Mm. Gog, any thoughts on that cliffhanger resolution?
No, I was happy the way they did it instead of taking the time to... I mean, we all know what happens. He fell down a cliff. It's all implied. You know, he got unconscious, Bulkhead found him, brought him back, and then got scolded for taking him on the mission. It was well handled, I thought.
Yeah, I figured, like, seeing that, I was like, okay, the cliffhanger was more so, this is the end of Bumblebee's horrible day, and to be continued, what happens after this day? What happens tomorrow, as his horrible day continues? So, yeah, I was cool with it. I guess that's really my main first talking point, because that was moving right off last episode. Gog, have you got any talking points?
Usually when I go first, I like to kind of start near the beginning and work our way through, but I'm actually going to skip straight to something. We talked a little in depth last time about the alliance between Mech and Starscream and how long it was going to last. And
yeah.
in perfect prime fashion, it was resolved entirely quickly, almost to the detriment, I think, because I would have liked to seen that go on for at least another episode or two. And I really, I guess, shouldn't be surprised, but I kind of was, actually. It didn't really hit me. It didn't really hit me at first what was happening until Starscream was like, yeah, we'll get you another one later or something. And he's like, not later, now. And I was like, oh, wow, they're already pulling that. Okay. So, but yeah, like, I'd say I was maybe a little disappointed how Starscream was kind of subservient almost. And he almost seemed more cowardly towards Mech than he did other Decepticons, or even Megatron himself. So, well, I guess not maybe Megatron, because there were some time Starscream at one point last season was like on his knees begging Megatron to let him live. So I guess that was, I guess that's true, but, either way, like I like Starscream. I thought he was great in this episode, but I would have liked to see that relationship play out just a little bit longer. But in the, what they were going for with the whole Mech needing a TCOG and all the kind of twists and turns that went along with that, it made perfect sense as far as that goes. But
yeah, it was the moment that, some of that stuff went down, I was sitting there going like, well, how's Mech going to get the TCOG? Cause last episode I said I was trying to avoid spoilers and then tried my best, but I caught the thing you guys were talking about with the episode titles. So I was like, all right, so how's this going to go down? And then it went down and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I was not at all surprised. You know, a couple of the notes that I had running along was the fact that, look, Starscream just is talking too much. He's getting on Silas's, you know, bad side. There's a lot of, oh, for us to raise our army. Well, okay, your army. You know, just on and on and on. And he wasn't, I don't know if this was Starscream trying to work a different angle, but he wasn't, definitely wasn't getting on Silas's good side the way that Silas would see it. So, all right, well, we lost one. Well, we really need a TCOG for what we're doing. So, oh, hey, there's one. It just happens to be inside of this a-hole. So, down you go, and then wake up short of kidney.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm okay with how it went down. Like, I definitely cannot disagree that it would have been fun to watch their relationship play out a bit longer. But at least I didn't feel it was done ineffectively either. Like, it still was done okay.
I think it really shows the fact that Mech is out to do what it's aiming to do as rapidly as it can.
Yeah, okay,
we might be able to knock another Autobot down and deal with him. Or, hey, right here, right now, boom, we got this, and we're going to lessen a threat to Mech or to Earth or however they're playing their allegiances by making one of these giant walking, talking death machines a little bit less capable.
Yeah, like it all felt in character, which was the main thing to me. Like even Starscream being a little bit cowardly towards Silas felt in character, given how Silas has been portrayed. If it was any other human, I'd have been like, I don't know about this. But with Silas specifically, maybe it's my Clancy Brown man crush talking. But it felt like that particular human being able to intimidate a Transformer worked. Just given what he has done to other Cybertronians in the series so far. So there were definitely parts of it that I felt like they did really jive with me, but, it was over pretty fast. And man, the universe just hates Starscream, doesn't it? Like,
he's bringing it on himself.
I know he is, but I said before, I was like, I feel kind of bad for Starscream in this series. And then at the end of this episode, I was like, I feel kind of bad for Starscream in this series. The poor guy is now like he literally woke up in the forest missing an organ with no way to get home, so he just ran off into the woods, and who knows what happens to him next. I actually quite enjoy it. I really like how Starscream is kind of like this just eternal, like, you just got to know what happens with him next, because whenever he shows up, things go bad for him, and you're like, if he survives, I want to know what he does next to try to bounce back from this. So I actually did enjoy that quite a bit. Moving on from there, Aaron, you got a talking point.
A little bit of a continuation or a continuing thought from that last one, dealing with the TCOG, that I had as the episode was wrapping up. I had to sit there and think about, you know, where there's a huge supply of TCOGs.
Yeah, I know. I know where you're going with this.
Viacons.
I had this discussion actually pretty close to finishing watching the episode.
So, you know, as soon as Ratchet was talking about a transplant, you know, it's like, well, then that could be a really dark place if they wanted to run it, of the Autobots capture or find a dead, even find a dead Viacon or a newly dead Viacon and take a TCOG out of him. Don't take it out of Ratchet.
But remember, though, remember how they reacted. Remember the wording, ghoul.
Yeah.
Like, that would be like a doctor, like, killing prisoners of war to take their organs to put into his own colleagues. Like, well, it logically works, but thus
the recently dead. That's like any organ donor, anybody driving a motorcycle that, you know, comes out as grade A road splatter. You know, hey, he's got parts and we think he has a donor card. Let's go.
I know where you're getting at, and I was thinking about that myself. And then I think it would be cool if they did it in the show, knowing the sheer consequences of doing such a thing in the universe this takes place in, because it's been implied that doing that is literally ghoulish.
Yeah,
and it is.
Which, but then my flip thought for that was then more for Starscream.
Oh yeah,
that, you know, as he manages to call down a task force and gets a TCOG. And maybe he tries again to bargain with Mech, or maybe he does some, like, Antarctica style, I'm going to do surgery on myself because I'm the only one that can type of deal to try and transform again, and it has consequences. Or I see a whole lot of TCOG sitting there in something that just gets vaporized episode after episode. So I was like, well, that seems like a lot of things sitting around, because we know that the Viacons aren't drones or something else at this point. We know that they're Transformers. They're just,
which makes it even more twisted,
NPCs
for an Autobot to kind of go. And people have made the point too, and I could not disagree. Jeffrey Combs doing it would be so thematic to his, you know, his roles he has played before. And I was definitely. But it would be like, I would not be opposed to the show doing it, provided they did it with just as grim and twisted a light as it would need to be done.
Yeah, that would be the hard dark turn. You know, especially with, you know, Bumblebee at the end of the episode, because I think it's Miko says, well, why don't we go with plan A of Ratchet donating his TCOG? And Bumblebee's like, well, you know, he didn't want to have anybody else's. So I don't know if that's like, you know, if it was something along those lines, or the fact that at the end of the episode, Bumblebee was like, hey, I kind of screwed all this up. I'm not going to cause more problems. I learned my lesson.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing would be a very interesting thing to see play out, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
Gog, how would you feel about some Ratchet parts cannibalism?
I actually hadn't thought about that idea, but that would have been... Yeah.
And they've got voice boxes, too.
It would have been interesting. Yeah, I know, right?
that would be friggin'...
That would be interesting. I mean, especially given what we've heard from the previous episode, being that that's how horrific that is, and even Megatron wouldn't do anything like that. So I don't see it happening unless it was straight up just like a dead Viacon already. But I guess the whole thing with that, it kind of opens a can of worms where you think, like, well, with all the Viacons and stuff they've killed, like, why haven't they gotten a new voice box? Or maybe the voice box itself is unique and they don't want Bumblebee talking like Steve the Viacon or whatever. But so I mean,
no, that wasn't Steve, that was Jim. Have some respect.
Yeah, Starscream killed Steve in episode 2 of the second season. Sorry for all the Steve fans, but
should be.
Yeah.
We're really gonna start it with the Steve fans.
Yep. But no, it's an interesting idea, but it does leave that open now, where in the future, if they needed to do something like that, but they could always say, like, well, we're not going to do it because that's kind of disgusting to us and we would never even consider anything like that. So,
yeah, I definitely think in reality that that's not something that they'd go to, because they have said that it's ghoulish, and just the fact that it'd be too much of a convenient out for any situation of, oh no,
he's injured,
they need,
quick, kill
they
another
need a transplant. Let's go find a Viacon and pull his TCOG out.
That would be interesting, though, if like they did that and that was the Viacons like going like, hey, these guys we're fighting are pretty friggin' crazy.
Yeah,
Every time they have an injury, they find one of us, kill us and dissect us. We're all from the same race. This isn't right. And like that's when the Viacons...
Oh crap, Bulkhead stubbed his toe again. Run fast.
That's when the Viacons become the heroes of the series. Like, we've got to take the fight to these evil, cannibalistic... This is feeling like Revenge of the Fallen and stuff now. Yeah. I'm feeling very movie all of a sudden. I don't know where to go with this conversation. I really liked Knockout entirely for one line, which I can't accurately quote because I didn't write it down.
Is this the transmission one?
No, not that one, actually.
Oh.
I mean, I dug that line, too, but it's not a very good, like, standalone line. It all had to do in the delivery. It's when he had the shield thing, and he was doing that lengthy line about congratulating himself on the most creative use of an ancient artifact shield or something.
Yeah, this year's award for most creative use of shield goes to
Knockouts, and it's like, oh, you fabulous bastard!
didn't he also have something about a finish protector in there too?
Oh yeah, that too.
That was the start of it.
He said, this is my new finish protector. Yeah, Knockout. Yeah. Knockout was knocking them out of the park. Yeah. This episode.
Well, there were a lot of those good kind of one line things that I have like three or four quotes down.
Yeah. Was Marty still in this episode? I forgot to check.
No, it wasn't. I did check that off the bat. Mm-hmm. It was one of the others that we'd seen do before. I'm trying to jump back to the beginning of that
episode. Very good follow-up on Marty then, because that stuff all felt... like, there's another line, which I'm sure one of us is going to bring up, that all felt really, like, in tune and entertaining.
Is that time to jet because I can?
I'll let it come up when it comes up.
That's the other quote that I had pulled.
Oh, no.
With Starscream's time to jet because I can.
That one was
written by Nicole
good.
Dubuck, or Dubuck, or...
Good job, Nicole. Whatever. You're making up for all those Miko lines. But Knockout had a fantastic couple of lines in this episode. And all it did was make me remember that Knockout's toy is not out yet, and then I felt kind of bad.
No.
Anyway, that's all I got. Gog, anything from your end?
I had what I wanted to bring up next, but... I'll say, okay, the whole twist and turn with the hammer and, how was Bumblebee going to get it back? And they actually had me there at the end. Like, I didn't know how that was going to go. It was Bumblebee needed his TCOG. Oh, look, here's some Deus Ex Machina. We're going to make a new TCOG. They're going to get it back, right? Oh, look. Here comes Megatron. He's going to walk it up, and he's going to scoop it out, and there ain't not a damn thing anybody can do about it, because Megatron's a badass, and Knockout's there with his shield, and they kind of stomped it at the end, which was a shame, because that was kind of cool. For a minute there, I thought, oh, look, Knockout has, like, his own little special ability that's going to come back. Nope.
Crunch.
I was kind of disappointed. I thought that would have been cool if Knockout had kept that device, and it would have been, like, his special power or something, like so many... You know, like kind of like G1, like every Transformer had like his own special ability or whatever.
Right.
But but no, that ended way too soon. But so Megatron comes out, gets the hammer. Starscream shoots Bumblebee's TCOG. And I'm like, oh, wow. So. And especially when then they take Starscream's, I'm like, so we're going to end this episode with two Transformers without TCOGs. Like, this is interesting. I wonder what's going to happen. Obviously, the hammer is going to have to come into play at some point. So I figured what was going to happen was Ratchet was going to give his, and Starscream was just going to be without one for however long. They pulled it on me. And some people probably saw it coming a mile away. That's fine. That's cool. But it didn't hit me that, like, this wasn't, like, even though the episode is called Operation Bumblebee, probably for reasons that we stated the last episode, this was much more of a Ratchet story.
Yeah.
And the way they concluded, I'm like, oh, that was kind of cool, because I didn't see that coming. So they had me. And especially with all the twists and turns about different guys losing their T-Cogs and all of a sudden abilities to make new ones coming up. And it's like, oh, Ratchet fixed it. He redeemed himself. So I thought it was neat. And like I said, tons of other people might have seen that coming a mile away, but I didn't. And so I thought it was neat when that happened. I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
I thought the hammer was going to make a new one. I
did too. Or eventually.
Certain.
Like,
yeah.
In the, like we said, the theme of things getting resolved quickly, I was like, oh, well, they're going to do some sort of espionage mission and get the hammer back. Like,
yeah, I definitely thought it was going to be a 3 or 4 episode before. Right.
But I still thought it was cool how they used that to introduce the hammer and never even used it. So now the hammer is here. It's in play. Megatron has it, but it was never actually used. But, you know, that's definitely going to come up for something big later. So, but yeah. I thought that was neat because it was a Deus Ex Machina that was never even touched and used for the purpose it was there for. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I think that using the hammer like that was nice because it's I mean, granted, it's still in play. It's still at the Decepticon base. I actually kind of like the approach of Megatron going like, kind of not being a super tyrant for a moment and going like, we've got to keep this away from the Autobots because if Optimus Prime gets his hands on it, this is over. And I kind of like that, like having those kind of stakes flipped over onto the villains. Because usually it's the case of the heroes are being beaten down and they've got to keep the villains away from this thing because if the villains get it, it's all over. In this case, the villains have something where if the heroes get it, it's all over. I kind of like that.
Which, I mean, that was something that's kind of one of my points that we can roll into is I wonder what being a Prime really means more because that's, you know, Solus Prime is one of the 13 and this is the first time that we've seen a 13 artifact, really, I want to say.
I think so.
In Prime. So we know due to botcons and whatnot that these items have additional power. I don't think they've necessarily said that in Prime. They've said that there's the 13 because they showed that like montage bit in the way, way back machine. But so does that mean that it has to be a Prime to power this, that that's part of the mysticalness of the key deal? It'll be real interesting to see how that plays out if Prime actually gets a hold of one of these artifacts of the 13 to see is it, you know, because Megatron obviously couldn't use it. You know, he just ended up beating the crap out of a box on a table rather than forging anything with it. So I'd be real interested to see how in this fiction Prime as a concept really plays out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like what the implications are, and maybe if the show does get a lot more cosmic, it could get really cool. If it's like, I mean, granted, this is kind of TV show, kind of MacGuffin-y, but it'd be cool if it was like eventually Optimus Prime is the one guy who can activate these artifacts and then suddenly get armed with like, you know, cosmic level gear. And hey, wait, we have Unicron, right? So we got a cosmic level threat, and then
Like if he gets a hold of the hammer, can he just go up and whap something? And okay, well now we have our space bridge because I hit this concrete bridge with the magic hammer. I hope
hit,
it won't be goofy as that.
I hit the
that.
Concrete bridge and filled it with space magic, and then
that sounds like an ending to a video game.
I don't know what you're talking about. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. And I really like the design of the hammer. I think it was a really cool looking model. That's one of those things where it's like, if they do actually start bringing in things like those artifacts, I would love to see a Transformers Prime just like accessory pack of like props from the show that are cool like that.
Like what's been done with animated.
Yeah, yeah. And that could maybe finally be an in for those third-party thieves to cheapen Transformers Prime, because point I made in an earlier episode, you want to tell me third parties can fully replace Hasbro, what can they do for me as a fan of Transformers Prime? Nothing right now. So, hey, maybe I just figured out a way for them to get in on that market. Thank me later. Moving on from there, I want to talk a little bit about Bumblebee. I think I kind of said this last episode, but I think Bumblebee in this episode was at his best I've seen him all season, if not all series. Actually, pretty much all series, because in the opening three-parter, he did very little. But I really enjoyed kind of just getting to finally get more of a glimpse of Bumblebee in this thing and like seeing him the way he would react to this kind of situation. I kind of enjoyed that. Now I sort of know he's not a scared youngster, really. He's almost like a frighteningly frustratable young Transformer. Like when he goes into the mech base, he had murder in his eyes. Like they used mm-hmm. Bumblebee's eyes fantastically in this thing. Like when they would start spinning and stuff, and I was like, oh man, he is mad. And when he's fighting the mech troops, like he was like just slapping them around.
Yeah, it was. I think I wrote down Jackie Chan because he maybe not quite crazy Jackie Chan style, but he was using, you know, he didn't have his blaster, so he threw like a iron crucible at him, and he was using his environment and
or even just,
and
just
really showing off that he was a brawler.
He was just straight up punching dudes across the warehouse.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like it made what RC did when she fought the mech guys like seem
tame.
Like. Yeah, team seem incredibly tame.
Yeah, he was.
There's no way
that
some of those dudes did not die.
Yeah,
which is fine considering what they did.
Just scooping them up, and yeah, there's three of them go flying and hit Chimera.
Yeah, no, he literally like backhanded three of them across the room, and I'm like, yeah, you get backhanded by a giant robot unless your armor is like super advanced. That's at least full body fracture, you know? Like,
yeah,
and I loved it because it really got across to me. Like, yeah, Bumblebee was mad. Like, he was mad and frustrated.
Even going up on, you know, he clears everything out, jumps up on Chimera, which is right where my episode's rolling right now, mm-hmm. is he just tears into Chimera then to get at his T-Cog. It's not not gentle. He's not taking his time. He's cheesed off and letting everybody know it.
Yeah, and I know I've kind of made fun of how movie Bumblebee can kind of be, like, a little bit frightening. But much like the point I've made, I think, twice now this season, this felt like you take movie Bumblebee and then you give him an actual layer of some kind of character. And that's how I felt about this. Like, yeah, this Bumblebee does get pretty rough. He does get kind of scary almost when he gets mad enough, but like you could understand it. Like, and you can almost feel for him. And for the first time for a character who goes bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, I was kind of getting it. Like I was starting to sort of click with him. By the way, Fowler had a fantastic line. I don't speak bleep. Which was, I think, really good. I have to say, like, I really felt into Bumblebee in this episode, and you know, entirely to the show's credit. Because I think the closest I've ever come to that is that episode when Bumblebee goes into Megatron's head, but it was still felt a lot more about Megatron than Bumblebee. So, I really actually was into Bumblebee this episode. Hope that it keeps up like that in future episodes. Gog, how'd you feel about the Beaster?
He was fine. I think these two episodes have been the most I've cared about Bumblebee one way or another. He's like Bumblebee has just kind of been there. I mean, he certainly had some attention lately, but during the first season, there were entire stretches of episodes that we never saw him other than just kind of being a background character.
Yeah, kind he's of like an also starring.
Some, yeah. So oftentimes like Raph, it's just like there were episodes like where's Bumblebee even at? So it was good to see him get a little more action. I had no complaints with him. Totally. I haven't checked the thread because I kind of tend not to anymore. As far as people's reaction to how they thought Bumblebee was. So I don't know if there's a people like, cause they did that with RC when Mech's introductory episode with the whole, I think it was called Convoy.
Yeah.
With, mm-hmm. when RC kind of jumped out the back of the truck and took some of those cars out. A lot of people had made the comment that there's no way some of those guys survived, which I agree. The way some of those cars were exploding, they had to have died. Which given the circumstance though, that doesn't bother me. If you're going to bring yourself into armed combat, you can't say, well, I'm a human and you're the good guy, so you can't kill me. If you're going to attack someone, you have to suffer the consequences of that. And if you're an Autobot, I don't care if it's a little fleshling that you are sworn to protect. If they are coming at you with deadly force with the intent on hurting you or others, then all bets are off. I mean, not, you know, you don't just go in and just drop bombs on everybody, but you have every right to defend yourself.
Well, Bumblebee had just had an organ removed.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. So, I think for him, it was even more personal because they had Yeah, they had basically tied him down and done one of the most horrific things possible to him, which is remove pieces of his body. And he didn't care at that point. And I have no problem with that at all. Because if some little dude, you know, if I was like Gulliver and Gulliver's Travels, and there's a bunch of little people, and I thought it was really screwed up to do things to them because I was the big strong guy. If those guys tied me down and started dissecting me, I'd have no problem stomping them out. Yeah. And I think Bumblebee was probably actually fairly calm, so I have no problem.
Oh, yeah,
with
no, that no. Like, I he was calm, but he was also just, you could see it, like the way they played his facial animation. He was just like seething. Like even when the odds were like 40 mech guys to one and Starscream's there, Bumblebee wasn't phased. He was just like you could imagine him just going like, "I am going to throw each and every one of you through the ceiling." Like he just looked angry. I loved it. It played so dramatically.
It was very much just a pick it apart fight too. It was like, okay, I got to go through you guys to get to that. So whap 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 whap.
Yeah.
Whap whap dodge whap. It was serious business time.
Yeah, and it was also great how like Starscream even kicked off the fight by going like, he has no T-Cog, he's unarmed, get him.
Yeah.
And Bumblebee's like, I am unarmed, I'm gonna still get all of you. I dug that a lot. So congrats, Bumblebee. Gog, have you got another discussion point?
Seems like we've really knocked out the main ones fast on this one.
Yeah, we hit the guts of it quick.
Yeah, and by the way, like I felt the same way. Like we're kind of blitzing through this, but it is. I thought this was a good episode too. Like I really enjoyed this episode.
Go ahead, Aaron. I'll see if I can think of one.
Some of the comedy in the episode, how did I write it down? Stasis is a lot like general anesthesia. Groggy in, goofy out.
Man, yeah, okay.
Because Ratchet had his line. Yeah. That was the other line, I guess, that I had up at the very beginning, because I wrote this and wrote basic stuff down before I even started watching the episode again.
Yeah.
With he, Bantor. That's Fusor. He was all mandrel before I put the tiger in his tanger.
it's also the way that he friggin' ate the word mandrel. Like, it was fantastic. And then, of all characters, to not only name drop, but then to directly state you know who you're talking about. Friggin' Bantor the Mandrill Tiger Fusor.
Right.
Like, I sat I was sitting there just going like, because people told me that Ratchet had a line, but I made sure no one told me what the line was. And then I heard that line and I was just like, number one, Jeffrey Combs referencing friggin' Bantor is like double fanboy pants explosion for me. And then also I was sitting there going like, all right, I gotta know, like, who is the one who so specifically said talk about Bantor? Like, did the writer just happen to know about Bantor? Did someone from Hasbro go like, it would be hilarious if you talk about Bantor? Was it like a fan in the room at the time? Like, I want to know the backstory to how friggin' Bantor got name dropped in that.
Yeah, which, and that was the spinoff in my brain of, so does that now mean that Fusors are in Prime, and because we kind of knew Beasts were, because there was a Bestial Prime, so maybe those guys are out there, but if that's the case, then we got Fusors, and we got all, oh boy, the world just got big with a throwaway line. Let's not overanalyze.
Yeah, don't overanalyze that line. I think the best way to think about that line is Ratchet was having an anesthetic-induced dream. Yeah.
He was tripping on the good stuff.
Yeah. If Fusors do show up in Prime, all the better, because, hey, that would be hilarious. But I love that name drop so much. I have a Bantor, actually. I bought a Bantor at retail in Toronto many, many, many years ago.
Yeah, I think that's one that I ended up not getting, because that's in that mid-beast phase.
Yep, the Fusors.
Stuff that, yeah.
Second season stuff.
But, yeah, that was, I think that was all of the drugged Ratchet, other than giving the out for Bumblebee.
Yeah. I felt bad for Ratchet, too, because I'm sure when he woke up, he probably felt all good, like, all right, I've given my T-Cog, and I still feel all right.
Yeah, he did. It's like, hey.
It's like, hey, we did it. I finally saved my... He did what? I kind of liked how that played out. Gog, are you a friend of Bantor?
Yes. We are bosom buddies, if you will.
Ooh. You ever put some tiger into the tank of a mandrill?
Or vice versa?
Once or twice.
How many different ways could that line be taken? Can you imagine being Jeffrey Combs and being given that line? Like, that line must have looked insane to anyone who didn't know who Bantor was. That line probably sounded insane to the probably large number of Transformers fans who, you know, they got into Transformers over the last couple of years and probably also don't know who Bantor is.
Wasn't there... Oh, I'm trying to remember. I could swear that there was a old marketing theme that had put some tiger in your tank. I can remember something like that.
I am not sure. Also, do you guys think this is going to...
Exxon. Their oil included the popular Put a Tiger in Your Tank advertising campaign and accompanying tiger mascot.
Ooh. Now
Bantor. To be like their premium. So somebody pulled a 60s, 70s oil reference that they continued to bounce occasionally, maybe?
And then mixed it into a reference to a specific $10 Fusor Basic from the late 90s.
Wow.
That's
deep.
That's probably the best line of the entire series right there. Do you guys think the Bantor aftermarket is going to spike due to this episode?
I myself checked, and you can still get it for like $8 plus shipping. Mm. So if it spiked, apparently it started real, real low.
There is a good chance that $8 in shipping is a spike for Bantor.
There are three guys with their Amazon accounts that are like, yes, we can get 9 for it. It'll be crazy.
I want to say Bantor had a screwed up hand, but I can't remember anymore.
Yeah, I think he was one of the, because he was just a basic.
Yeah, and he had like legs for a hand or something like that.
No.
I remember I got Bantor and I got Noctoro, and I thought Noctoro was awesome, and Bantor was kind of okay. I like Noctoro a lot. I hope that he gets a reference soon. Bantor has taken over the podcast. Anything else from you guys?
I've still got a bit of list here. If GOG hasn't come up with one.
Oh, here we go. My favorite part of primetime is Aaron's B-list. Go ahead, my friend.
Aaron's B-list?
I don't know. The majority of it also comes down to... We did get some more fanboyisms in there. Fort Max Grade Nucleon Shock Cannon.
Oh yeah, that was like how many things put together?
Yeah, yeah. That's okay. My second part of that is go fanboy word usage.
Yeah. What? Okay. Like I might be missing something, so feel free to educate me here. I definitely remember the Nucleon Shock Cannon from War for Cybertron, but does that predate that?
Nucleon was also the substance that created the Action Masters.
What, but was there ever a Nucleon Shock Cannon?
Not that I know of before.
Because there, that was a kill streak bonus in multiplayer for War for Cybertron.
Oh, wow.
Exactly, Nucleon Shot Cannon.
So I was going to say, they're referencing Fortress Maximus and Action Masters, and then by virtue of that, War for Cybertron as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
who wrote this wiki again?
Coming up with the cartoon and War for Cybertron.
Well, what was her name again? Who wrote this?
That's a good question.
You just told me, like, 10...
Yeah, I know, because I rewound the episode so I could double-check.
Yes.
Nicole Dubuc. Dubuc? D-U-B-U-C.
Nicole Dubuce. I'm guessing. Okay. You are very cool. I just want to throw it out there. I have something I can talk about, actually.
Oh, heck, she was one of the kids on Major Dad.
Oh, wow. The Thing, Project Chimera... It woke up, which means it has a basic operating system at the very least, because we got to see through its point of view for a little while before Bumblebee jumped on it and broke its point of view.
Yeah, that's a basic DOS shell.
Well, yeah, that was a question I was having last episode, was what were they hoping for by trying to get it to transform? So I was like, oh, so it clearly has some kind of onboard, at least basic operating system, if not basic artificial intelligence. Unless that was just magic Energon powers giving it a brain, I don't know. But that was kind of cool to get this moment of the thing waking up, because that also made it even darker when Bumblebee jumped on it, knocking it out before ripping its chest open and taking an organ out of its body. So I like that. We got the first hint of exactly what is Project Chimera. Well, it can see.
Yeah. Step and kind of flex its fingers a little bit.
Yeah. The finger flex was the first thing where I was like, what? And then when I could see it, I was like, ooh, there's something going on here. Gog, any thoughts on Project Chimera?
Not yet. I think, I think I want to word this. Without saying any more, I will say that I heard rumblings from various people that because I don't even remember what it looked like, to be honest. But I saw a couple people make comments about how the shoulder pads kind of looked like Primes.
I saw that on Twitter. Someone said that
I think it was Random Factor, maybe?
They were using a similar model piece for
that. Which goes with the whole Chimera theme. Like I said, they've scanned various Transformers, some closer than others, and seem to be kind of building the Chimera project little bit by little bit as they get more info, as they capture various Cybertronians. So it would make sense how maybe, and I haven't compared part by part, and it's still kind of too skeletal, I think, too, at this time, but it's going to be kind of interesting to see what it looks like when it's fully built, and maybe some of the episode titles already spoil that, or maybe they don't. But if it's not already a foregone conclusion what it's going to be, then it would be interesting to me to see where it would go otherwise.
I was actually just rewatching parts of the episode that it was in, and just realizing, I also, this is kind of thrown back, I love the part when Bumblebee responds to Starscream's threats by running at him and punching him in the face.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Project Chimera, it is clearly using, like, on a show technical level, it looks like it's using some bits and pieces of other models, which is kind of cool, because that is, as you said, very thematic to what it's supposed to be. I was just flipping out because Gog shared the Killstreak list over Skype, and the second thing there, the Overshield Matrix, wouldn't it be cool if in the script that's what Knockout's shield stick was called?
That's the Killstreak bonus for the scientist. So that's why I remembered the Nucleon Shot Cannon, because that was what I mostly played as. So
I was wondering if that was maybe Skyboom, since they've dropped other names.
That would be an ignoble end to the Skyboom shield if it was just crunched by a hammer. I always felt bad for Skyboom because that was three minicons just really putting it on the line, like turning themselves into a shield. They were badasses.
My face will stop this.
One other thing, too, that I wanted to bring up that I just remembered. Is that the first time we've ever seen Starscream's transforming arm blaster? Because traditionally, traditionally he's used his missile. He actually got a blaster similar to RC's, except for it was glowing all red and creepy looking. Yeah. So I just didn't remember seeing that before, so I wasn't sure if that had popped up before.
I don't remember seeing it before, because it did catch my eye, too, when it came out. I think mostly because of the red glow.
I definitely feel that that's the first time that we've seen it, because every other time it's been the missiles. And even when Jack or Raph used his severed arm, it was the missiles that launched.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure. I think that was new. I also did another action sequence I wanted to quickly point out. I loved the moment when Bulkhead hammer swatted Breakdown. The way that they animated that whole bit, and then Breakdown, like the sheer weight implied by when he smacked into Knockout, was really well done. A lot of good action in this, a lot of good poses. I think that might have been the first time we saw the Starscream gun hand. I'm also noting that Megatron is indeed carrying the hammer with one hand while Bulkhead needed two. Other than that,
I'm kind of glad too, because at first I thought they were going with a whole Thor's hammer thing. Like, no one can pick it up except for Prime. And I was like, come on, especially with the Thor movies being so recent, or Thor movie. Like, are we really going to do that? Like, is it going to be that, you know? I mean, this is akin to making a Deadpool reference in Shattered Glass. Like, come on, are we really going to do this? So, like, I was happy to see that, no, it's just really freaking heavy. So, Breakdown and Bulkhead Breakdown had trouble. Bulkhead could lift it. Megatron could lift it easier because he's a badass.
Right, so, but he still looked like when he was forging that it was a issue.
It was
right.
Heavy.
Well, it's stinking. But that's the problem. It's just stinking heavy. It's not impossible to lift unless you're the chosen one or whatever. So, yeah. I was worried there for a minute. I was like, oh, come on, no.
It's time for this plot idea. yeah, that was pretty well done. I'm trying to think of anything else. I felt really bad for Bumblebee when his T-Cog got fried, because can you imagine, like, hey, guess what? You got it. It's roasted, but here, you got it. Poor guy looks so defeated. Like, Bumblebee was so emotive, and I know he's been technically emotive before, but like on a deeper level, he was so emotive in this episode. I could actually really feel for him. I loved it. Anyway, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. How do you guys think Hatsune Miku fit into this episode? Going off my list from before.
Did she even do much this time around?
She's doing exactly what she's done for this entire season, and probably most of last. Well, most of last, she actually would do things like, hey, let's jump through portals without knowing what's on the other side. So at least she seems to have stopped doing that for the time being. But she definitely has a trend this season, and that's every episode she will deliver two awkwardly out of place one-liners. Mm-hmm. So she seems to be, that's her role. She's just going to drop a couple of one-liners that don't fit in with anything that's going on or any conversation, and then, or sometimes just utterly embarrass herself, even if they are fitting, and then everything else carries on as normal. So yeah, that's, she fulfilled her role.
And for the joke side of me wondered if her voice actress just came in, recorded a bunch of random lines, and they found ways to plug them into episodes.
Maybe she got busy, yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. I could even be a non-joke thing. Like, here's some lines that we foresee being able to use. Just
say
punch
T-bone
these out,
steak.
And then you can get your... Yeah, punch these out, and then you can get 6 weeks off.
I just wanted to tell all the fan artists out there that I hope you appreciate that we just connected Miko to Hatsune Miku, and I'm sure you all know what to do next. Other than that, I kind of feel like I'm out of things. I mean, I'm at the end of the episode again. I was real happy for Bumblebee when he finally transformed. Poor guy. He was like, let's just drive! I was like, you go drive, Bumblebee. And while you're out there, give Raph some of your character development.
So what do we think about this two-parter versus the three-parter? Or not even necessarily versus, just on its own?
I enjoyed this more or less all the way through. I felt the stakes were not as high as the three-parter, but I also felt it was just really enjoyable two-part story.
If they could do more of these similarly, I think that's a good thing. Having 44 minutes or whatever to stretch a story out over is definitely going to give you more story. And as individual parts, they worked well also.
Yeah, like I said, the stakes weren't high, but the events were I think just justified for a two-parter, like having Starscream meets Mech, and we're going to show you what this thing Mech's been working on is, and all this other stuff. Like, a whole bunch of little reveals and moments, I thought were still pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it was weird to have a two-parter right after the three-parter, because it is making, in my recollection now, just like if I'm subconsciously thinking about it, Prime has been 5 weeks of serialized entertainment. Like, basically a long string of To Be Continued, which I'm used to. I watch Japanese shows all the time. Tokusatsu is a 49-episode serial most of the time. So I'm like, all right, I get it. Like, it's cool for me. But it felt a little bit odd. Not bad. It's almost kind of cool, actually, to have, like, these ties running from episode to episode. But it felt odd to have literally the words part number in 5-episode titles in a row. And I'm kind of glad that we're moving away from that. Just for my own aesthetic taste.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Like, all the characterizations were great. Ratchet was awesome.
Yes.
Bumblebee for the first time, I thought, was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Starscream was great. I kind of wish he wasn't as cowardice towards a human. Regardless, I mean, and that's not to put down Silas, because Silas is a badass. But I kind of wish Starscream had maybe stood up to him a little more arrogantly, and then that would have been more of the icing on the cake when Silas did stab him in the back.
Yeah.
I love Starscream. It's going to be really interesting to see where he goes from here on, because It's easy for Bumblebee to get a T-Cog one way or another, whether it was to get one forged from him, whether it was to get his repaired by Ratchet, whether it was to have a transplant. Bumblebee had all kinds of options. Starscream doesn't have those options unless, even if he gets one, they've already kind of established that it requires some level of surgery.
Right.
Or at least preferably. Starscream is in a bit of a predicament now, and this isn't just something that is like, oh, this sucked to that character. I wonder if it's going to come up again. It doesn't have any choice but to come up again, because that's a big deal when a Transformer can't transform and now they're running around in the woods like a boogeyman.
So. Especially when it seems that like weapon activation also relies on the T-Cog. You know, it's not just like he has a gun that he pulls out of hammer space from, you know, behind his back miraculously. No, it's the arms actually transform just the same as apparently as transforming into an alt mode. You know, so if he doesn't have access to that, maybe he can still use his missiles once on each arm. You know, it seems like it's a lot bigger deal than just, oh, he can't turn into a jet, but like he can't do anything.
And it was also just desserts after what he did to Bumblebee. He basically sat there for a good 2 minutes and mocked him, and then destroys his biomech organ in front of him, laughs at him, continues to mock him, and then leaves. So it was kind of a nice, ironic pie-in-your-face moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what poor Erraticon may or may not be the donor for Starscream's ability to turn into a jet again. Because we've seen Starscream can put his hand through a Transformer's gut.
Yeah.
So he could probably do the surgery himself. At least one side of the surgery, if he really needed to. Just, you know, pack it in ice and then find a doctor. Don't tell him how you got it. I wanted to also throw in another really quick moment. I kind of was touched by the whole, like, Ratchet being all pumped at the end of the episode, watching Bumblebee drive off. He's all like, yeah! But,
Well, that was definitely something I liked in the episode, too, is that even though it was named as Bumblebee's episode, it was really Ratchet. You know, in the beginning, Ratchet was like, you know, hey, I'm going to give up being able to transform, you know, the thing that, you know, is like the primary characteristic of our race.
It was great.
In order to make up for this, mistake or inability of something that I did long ago. And then he was able to make everything work in the end and get his mojo back.
And it was I thought really justified the way he approached it too, because like they said, that's like giving your kidneys away and stuff, but Ratchet doesn't leave the base very much, and as much as I don't think he should have gotten rid of the T-Cog, I think just it was in character and in universe very, very justified and kind of powerful, that little moment where he's like, no, I'll give it up. I'm an old doctor. I never leave this place. You know, I don't rely on speed like he does, that poor youngster. I was like, oh, that's so touching.
Yeah, he even said, he's like, the ability to transform is practically wasted on me.
Yeah. And like, I was like, oh, Ratchet, like, you poor guy.
Like, yeah, like, we saw him transform in the pilot. I'm sure we probably saw him transform at one point during Stronger, Faster. We saw him pick up Raph from school last episode. So, like, that's it. Like, Ratchet, like, hardly ever transformed, so.
Yeah. It was this is very nice character moments in this episode, I think. But that's pretty much me tapped out, I think. Anything else from you guys, or shall we call this a prime time?
Let's call it.
All right.
That's good.
Yeah.
Let me just check something quickly.
One more thing.
Oh, I'm surprised.
Derp, I'm going to talk really slow to Bumblebee because he's apparently a moron.
Oh, I like that. That was great.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Listen. Yeah.
But yeah.
I know that you're disabled or something, so I'm going to be really condescending to you. Like, Fowler, come on, man.
That was so good. So Fowler, because he could tell he wasn't even trying to be malicious. He just doesn't get it. He's just like, all right. I actually have a quick listener question for Primetime.
Okay.
That we could blast through from the Shockwave 1138 on YouTube. To Vangelis and whoever else deems themselves worthy of joining this week's discussion, tip when people say, I'm not sure, is this the right place to ask? And if you say it is, maybe tell listeners where that question was sent so nobody else has to ask. Nope. On to the question proper. We have heard that Soundwave will eventually speak in Prime. I forgot where we heard. I think it was implied at a convention, or like when he talks, it'll be worth it or something like that. But I don't,
yeah,
they, I at don't, least they said that, he can talk, but chooses not to, I think was the specific information. But that aside, Shockwave 1138 is curious. How do we all want him to sound? Should it be G1, Bayformer, or something new and fresh? Addendum, how often would you like him to speak if he does start speaking? Should he suddenly decide to talk or remain mostly silent, speaking only when absolutely necessary? Shockwave 1138's opinion, he should only talk when necessary and hopefully keep communication as brief as possible. It should also be downright scary if he sounded something like Sovereign, the Reaper from Mass Effect. Apologies for length of question. Lol, your humble servant, Shockwave 1138, click. I think we did actually talk about this during the opening five-parter of the series, but... I mean, I've made it known. I want Soundwave to not speak until it is the biggest damn moment of the show when he does. And I don't know. I think it would be neat if he sounded kind of G1-ish, but I wouldn't want it to just be vocoded. I would want it to be something as shocking as when Sovereign spoke. That's kind of what I'd want out of it. And I loved the way Sovereign's vocal effect was done. I think that was still... Sovereign is still my favorite voice ever done in that whole... Like, my favorite piece of sound design done possibly in a video game. Sovereign was fantastically done. But Aaron, how do you feel about Soundwave's voice?
The more I think about it, the more I think that Soundwave needs to talk exactly the amount that he has so far. I do feel that there is possibility in there to have it be something epic, but at the same time, the looming, quiet, but commanding presence is something that is very good to lose that and have him become Gabby Chatty Valley Girl or, you know, that's the other extreme of how any sort of communication would go. But I think that having him just know, you know, when Black Arachnia was like, okay, well, I'm going to take over now. Soundwave just beats her down, looms over her. And then it's like, okay, I get your point. That is so much better than if he had decided to have a discussion with her or, you know, Black Arachnia inferior, Soundwave superior, you know. I think that the way that Prime handled it, especially with the way that they've started to build Soundwave in Prime, is the best way to do it. He doesn't need to talk. If he does, okay, the way that Sovereign in Mass Effect kicked out, you know, that this thing doesn't talk, and then it's something that's massive.
And then when it talks, it does it once and then doesn't do it again, pretty much.
Yeah.
I like to add on to mine. I also would not want him to suddenly become chatty. I'd want it to be this one event, and then afterwards you're in more fear of Soundwave because you're like, what if he talks again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gog, how do you feel about this question?
We've talked about this before, and I've said before that I don't want him to talk until probably the series finale. And when he talks, I want it to be the most horrific, blood-chilling thing that you've ever heard. Just like, wow. Like, I don't want him to sound like G1. I just want him to sound like a demon. And you're just like, that is why. But I'm looking for a picture. Let me see if I can find it right here. Because, and I don't know if this is really canon or not, but it came in the... Let me see, which one was this? I think this was in the little prequel comic, but one of the pictures that we have from the Prime comic, I think there was only one Prime comic, right? That was just a little...
The prequel, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. In that, they actually show Soundwave with a face. This is what I would like to see, and I'm not saying it's going to happen. Probably never will. What I'd love to see is, like, in the season finale during an epic final battle, because where Soundwave's screen face is right now again, I don't know if the actual writers of the show consider this canon or not, but from what we see here, he actually has a real face, traditional robot face, under that screen.
Oh, that would be so cool.
I would love to see, yeah, in the final battle, somehow deals a blow to Soundwaves that shatters the screen, and you see the face underneath, and that's when he gives this blood-chilling voice from underneath for the first and only time.
Oh, that would be so good.
Again, I'm building this up. This will never happen, I would love it. I would absolutely love if that happened. So that would be epic. And save it until the end, the very end.
Yes. Oh, that would be... not even that specific... I don't want it... Even if it doesn't happen specifically like that, that perfectly communicates the moment kind of thing that I'm talking about, or that it is the event that Soundwave speaks. Like, that kind of moment would just
be... Yeah, because if this picture is to be believed, it's as if he sealed his own face off in a tomb.
Yeah.
Like, his face has been paved over to allow for nothing but silent information to be transmitted. And if, you know, you can go into layers of psychology there, too, because people who, you know, wear... it could be attributed to being a mask, something he's hiding behind. And when that's shattered and he's exposed for the first time in a very long time, it could send him over the edge because he put that screen on his face for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could be good.
Oh, actually, there were other comic books, I think. I'm just looking at the link now. This, I think, came from the Titan Prime comic books, which are the UK ones.
Oh, I don't think I've read those.
Most people haven't. But yeah, I don't know. It could be super cool. So yeah, definitely. And that's pretty much that. That is now pretty much it. I will say, before everyone says it, yes, I did hear Aaron say Black Arachnia several times, but I let it fly because I knew what he was talking about.
I think we've all made that mistake at one point or another.
Yeah, it's not a hard mistake to make. She is a spider lady robot who's kind of nasty.
Oh yeah, arachnid. Yeah.
I was hoping if I said it would make you like just wait for the episode to come out so you could then go back and re-listen to what you said.
Ah, how'd you let me be stupid? Damn it!
I was sitting there rubbing my chin, going, "I wonder if I should say nah."
Oh hey, at least you didn't say posthumously.
What the fuck's going on down there?
Posthumously.
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 Possumly.
So many possums.
Awesome possum.
And on that note, thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back with more Prime Time as Prime continues to air. So look forward to the next episode. We're going to have stuff to say. Until then, we are Prime out!
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.